From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
Cultural and social changes that leaders, especially church leaders, can't afford to miss. Our guest is Dr. William O. Avery, Emeritus Professor of Stewardship and Church Leadership at Gettysburg Lutheran Seminary. And I want to be sure, Bill, before we even begin, that we get exactly what your title was, because it was quite remarkable and was funded by an outstanding lay leader in the church. It was the Arthur Larson Professorship.
Arthur L. Larson Professor of Stewardship and Parish Ministry. And as part of that, not only did I teach stewardship, but I also taught what we have traditionally called evangelism, ecology, and I've been in all the integrative seminars whenever our students are working out in a church or in the world, and then they integrate that with classroom. I was part. There's three courses in a seminary's career doing that, and I taught in all three.
And your most recent books, all of them, in fact, had something to do with lay leadership, the history of lay leadership, hints for conducting reliable church leadership. But the most recent one was done jointly with another professor.
Yes, it was done with Professor Beth Gaiety, and it uses science. Mm-hmm. And the principles of science, mm-hmm. If this is the way the world works, okay. And we use some of the basic philosophy of science and principles of science and say, if that's the way the world is, then is here how the church can use these principles to be a healthy, faithful, vibrant church.
And one more I got to mention, that is that you did the history of the Lutheran layman's movement at one point in your career.
Right. It's the only book for which I got an award. I got Concordia Historical Society Award. I have that plaque because it was new research. Yeah. No one had ever traced this organization that at one time was very powerful. Oh, yeah. And so, yes, that was 1997, a while ago, but I'm very proud of that book.
What are the major differences you see in the world today that we have to pay attention to? Let's begin with the newest generation.
Okay. I'm going to do this by telling stories, and most of the stories about my own family, because I know them the best. I have right now living with me my great-nephew, who just graduated from Gettysburg College, and he's going to hope to become a park ranger, and he has a girlfriend who also just graduated from college, and they do their laundry at our house. So last week, they were down in the television room doing their laundry, and I walked through to the office. And each one of them had their intelligent cell phone, and they were playing games, or they were texting, or they were doing something. Each one, they had the television on, and they were carrying on a conversation with one another. All these things, all this simultaneous things, and everything's short. You know, it's Twitter, no more than 140 characters. It's a different world. Think about that over against the staidness, the monological 12 to 15 minute sermon, and you can see it's a different world.
Yes.
Our oldest son lives in California, and he works for a company that has plants in 14 different countries worldwide. He himself keeps flying over to China because that's one of his major responsibilities. In fact, when I went out to visit them last month, he was still over in China, had to fly back the next morning after we had arrived. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing for him, as you look at his life, is his boss is a woman. That's somewhat new. Mm-hmm. His boss is Mexican-American.
Mm-hmm.
Her boss, or his boss's bosses, mm-hmm. is Irish and mm-hmm. lives in Ireland. Mm-hmm. His people, many of the people that work under him, are in China. So he kept talking about William. And I thought, William was an American name.
Yeah.
No, it's something like William Wong.
Uh-huh.
So this is a Chinese person, fluent in English, but apparently never been to the United States, and that's who he's working with. And with those cultural, it's a worldwide environment. My son's closest friend for years that he trusts explicitly is a Japanese-American. And this Japanese-American is not very religious at all, but at least is not Christian. And my daughter-in-law's closest friend is a woman from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, this little country and Muslim country. But she's not Muslim. She's Buddhist because she's from India. She's an Indian.
Okay.
And 40% of the population of Dubai is Indian. Not, and so you have this cosmopolitan city, and it, her cousin came from Dubai while we were there, so we got to talk about his worldwide travels. I'm putting this in a context to see that it's very different. Their friends are gay, straight, black, white, Mexican. You can. It's just this melting pot of ideas.
Yeah.
But the church to them is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
They're not angry with the church. It isn't that they don't think church is good for people. On the abstract, they think it is. But it's so irrelevant to them.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit in this cosmopolitan world in which they live.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the strange phenomena about today's world is that even while they find the church irrelevant, and they don't think to go to the church for answers to spiritual issues, they consider themselves far more spiritual, I think, than previous generations.
Yes.
But it's a personal fed spirituality in which they go to friends and they talk on the on their cell phones and they talk on the internet and they look it up in Wikipedia.
Right.
But going to church is not even in their ideas.
The folks who are involved in this new trend, these new trends, plural, will come back to worship, do you think, if that worship service is going to be changed radically? And please, I'm not recommending anything here. I'm just wondering.
You know, I don't think there's any easy answer to that. And I think, for example, praise bands with guitars and that reaches a certain element, but not many. For others, a liturgy that has a lot of mystery in it, that has a lot of age to it, that can be very comforting. One of our young pastors in the Lutheran Church, who has become very famous, Nadia Bowles Weber, a former drug addict, a former alcoholic, who turned her life around, and she's written about this in a book called Pastrix. She hates praise hymns. She hates all this. What she loves is the liturgy.
I'll be darned.
The steadiness of the liturgy.
Darned.
So worship, I say they need to have variations because it will attract different people. This one size fits all isn't the best.
So variety will be.
But I think if we went all loud bands, praise, we'd lose as many young people as we would gain.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
So there's no magic bullet out there.
Okay. So
I think what it needs instead, now I have to get to the base, we need pastors who and lay leaders who think outside the box, who color outside the lines, who are, in the best sense of the word, risk-taking entrepreneurs. Not for themselves, but for the Lord and for the church. In a genuineness of faith that also understands practices that root people in community. Because I think this change does take place in community. And despite all the individualism of many spiritual quests, I think the young people form their own communities technology online, virtual communities, and the entrepreneurial pastor and lay leader who's also faithful can use this by coloring outside the box and taking risks. Probably 7 out of 10 attempts will fail, but it will reach some of these people that we're not reaching at all now.
Yeah, the challenge will be to get more than one at a time because they like to communicate with one another. But on the other hand, if I'm still thinking in traditional terms, getting inside the church, probably that's where my assumption is false. We're not going to be able to get them necessarily to church. We're going to reach out to them by some technological means. But if people do come to church, it's going to be more than one. I mean, the dialogue can't just be with people our age and older, Bill. They've got to have enough people of their own age. Yeah. Like you're talking about your opening statement there of your young relatives.
Right. I don't think, at least in the next generations, will ever reach where it was when I was growing up in the post-World War II period. That is, at the height of that, about 1960, 61.2% of the people said they attended church regularly. That's what they said. But there was high church attendance. But mm-hmm. why was it? Mm-hmm. Was it for a deep love of Jesus Christ? Oh, yes, in many cases. But in many others, it was Christian America mm-hmm. against communist mm-hmm. Russia. Mm-hmm. So you went to church to be a good American. It was cultural Christianity. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't making radical Christians. It was making good citizens. Mm-hmm. The American way of life, in many ways, was what being... We'll not go back to that, and that we haven't lost much, because the problem with that level of cultural Christianity was it's like a river near us, Susquehanna, which is a mile wide, but about 3 inches deep. There will be many fewer people going to church, but those that go will go out of conviction. They are deeply committed to Jesus Christ and to his church. And they'll be more like the yeast that raises the bread, the salt that mm. gives taste to a meal. It's going to be a much smaller group, but those that do follow the Christian path. So I think we have to say that it might be a much smaller church, but a very vibrant church.
What you've stressed the need for meaning even among this millennial generation. What forms do you think that meaning will take? Is it reaching out to other people so I have flesh and blood friendships, significant relationships with others? Is it a kind of spiritual comfort that when the world does end in my science fiction world, I'm going to have a place? That last one doesn't seem to be appealing to other people, but I'm just guessing right now.
Yeah, I think meaning-making, churches need to be about meaning-making. So okay. Lives are meaningful. But I think the way that can go can vary widely depending on the congregation. So one may go to return to an ancient practice. Say Saint Ignatius and okay. his, or another mm-hmm. might use it in service in community. Another, I think this can vary, and it has to go along with the passion of the pastor. If the passion of the pastor is for this meaningful practice, mm-hmm. and it's an attractive one to others, if she or he does something that she or he really finds meaningful, then it's much easier for that person to work with other people so they find the same or similar meaning in it.
That catches that point I was trying to make earlier, the observation that many have made, that if you're going to raise money, it usually has to be for little Bobby who has cancer.
Right.
And you go on a march, or even though you go on a run, you don't do marches, you go on a run and you make contributions, and everybody joins in on that, and you have a Saturday. The significant thing there, it seems to me, is there is relationship. People are getting together, and they're seeing each other and having coffee before they go on the run, or they're getting together afterwards, and they're doing it together, whereas a check in the mail to a congregation has a different kind of meaning, which no longer appeals very much. So if we're going to do some fundraising, we're going to have to look at different ways of going about things. It's going to be a challenge because you can't say, well, little Bobby is going to give all his money to the church.
Right.
You know, you're going to have to help little Bobby.
Right.
And how you do that for a whole church, I think, continues to be a challenge for fundraising or stewardship in the foreseeable future.
I think you're right on track. Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And as it happens, not only is attendance down, but of course fundraising is down in the churches, and that's going to be a challenge as we go forward.
Right.
Among the other things in searching for meaning, do you think we need to give up? Please, I'm being radical now. Do we have to give up on the normal sermon? Do we have to give up on the sermon altogether, and above all on the sacraments of baptism and communion? Or is it going to be the traditional, rooted in the traditional, and obviously I'm proposing this as a way of approach, rooted in the traditional, but reaching out in new ways. I mean, rooted in baptism, Eucharist, preaching, traditional liturgy, and then new ways of approaching people on the basis of the old.
Well, first part, all or nothing doesn't cut it.
Doesn't cut it.
So it isn't that we won't do away totally with sermons. I think sermons will tend to become more dialogical. I think sermons will tend to grow out of the congregation, studying the word ahead of time and helping to present the congregation, even if it isn't during that 15 minutes. They've had a study group to study the lessons that will be preached on and help the pastor write his or her sermon.
Okay.
And then I think the sermons will have to be much more specific in terms of the gospel, the good news.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news that God loves us and we're to love others is too general. There has to be specificity to it. And so growing out of the sermons will be some specificity of things that the community, the congregation does. All these things. I think the form, and, you know, if these churches are smaller, you know, if we have 5 to 10 people around a coffee table and we're presenting, that's going to be very different than if we have 200 in a lecture room.
Yeah.
And so as churches go smaller and we go more and more to smaller groups, then I think it by nature has to become more dialogical.
Mm. The presence of handheld devices during a sermon would personally not disturb you then if you were preaching and people were out there punching the way they might actually be entering into the dialogue. It's also possible, of course, they're totally disengaged, but we don't know for sure, really. I mean,
but a pastor can set that up.
Oh, really?
With what she or he would expect of those who are using their computers, that they're tied into the sermon somehow, and they're responding, and somehow the pastor or someone's going to see this, or they have a community out there doing it together. There'll be a few just going and doing their thing, but if they're using these smartphones, let's say, in church, it's because the pastor's helped set this up, and they're doing something connected with what's going on in worship.
It's got to be intentional, then. Let's set up a paradigm. And this is not the answer, though, but it's one idea that we can follow through on. The pastor would say that the sermon this week is going to be on the Good Samaritan, okay?
Right.
Now, a week or two in advance, say, what do you all think about that? What have been your experiences? And he can collate, he reads these Twitters, he reads these messages, and incorporates that in the sermon, then encourages people to be responding to him as he speaks.
Right.
During the very delivery of the sentence, the sermon, and then later on again looks at all of this and probably responds to people after the responses from the people who've heard it.
Right, except that he wants to, on the Good Samaritan, then have specific ways they can be the Good Samaritan the next week. Specific ways.
That has not changed, by the way.
Right.
We were taught that in our preaching long ago. Don't just end by telling them, you know, the good news, but tell them what they can do about their lives if they want to, you know.
Right. And then as a church,
yep.
work to do some of these things.
Yep. Point out places that they can organize or ways of helping and being their own good Samaritan.
Right.
In general, have we not covered all of the cultural trends? We've covered the biggest ones. What ones have I missed? Are there any that you have not had a chance to talk about that in our final minutes you might want to lift up?
You know, I think we have really, really caught all the important ones. I have a list here of 12, and we've covered all 12 of these in some way or another.
Well, let's summarize them by mentioning all 12.
Okay. And
that'll be our closing shot.
Number one, online or smartphone is his new default. You know, Wi-Fi and Twitter and all that stuff. Number two, dialogue. People
yep.
want to talk, not just listen.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, no brand loyalty. Now, we didn't talk about that, but I think that...
We hinted at it,
mm-hmm. that it doesn't mean much to anybody to be Lutheran or Methodist or Presbyterian or Catholic or any of these things.
Okay.
That just
no brand
gone.
Loyalty.
And it goes with the declining trust in authority, which is another one.
Okay.
Another one is lack of guilt. We talked to that.
Mm-hmm.
Guilt used to motivate people to change and even come to faith.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A personalized, eclectic spirituality. People want to find their own unique path, and most start out that way.
One will go on a run, another one will go to St. Ignatius Loyola for spiritual exercises.
Exactly. So we may get them on the path of Christ, but they're not starting there.
Mm-hmm.
That's these young people that I see who are not church. The
mm-hmm.
church is irrelevant, so they're looking every other way. A desire for greater purpose. We said they want purpose in what they do. A personal mission. People aren't waiting for someone to change the world. They'll just do it. They have their own mission of what they're going to do. From charity runs to nonprofits from home, the very things you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that turn these people on now. Trust in user reviews. Remember I said they're peer groups.
Mm-hmm.
What you say about your church, for example, matters much less than what others say, particularly people their age. And finally, the death of cash and checks.
Yes.
And for the young people, that's really happening in a hurry.
Yeah.
And for us, too, how much less do we use our checks than we used to?
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's a great summary. We've been talking about cultural changes and social changes that leaders, especially church leaders, can't afford to miss, with Dr. William O. Avery, retired, now emeritus professor of stewardship and church leadership at Gettysburg Seminary in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where we're recording today. I'm Jerry Christensen, and for the Seminary Explorers, have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explorers, from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.